Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to our City Council meeting for March the 19th, 2014. Today is Wednesday. I currently have 7:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. And thank you all for being here. First thing we'll do this evening is tonight's invocation will be given by myself, Mayor, and then we'll have our pledge. And so our pledge will be led by Scout Nathan Stevenson. And so Nathan, come up after we finish with the invocation. Thank you.
Our Father, which art in heaven, we're grateful for this day and for this wonderful city that we live in, and we're grateful for our residents and for those who serve them. We ask that thou would guide us tonight and in every meeting when we are doing the people's work, and pray that we may do it in a manner pleasing unto them, but unto thee as well. And say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Nathan. We always like it when a scout can deliver the pledge for us. So, first thing we need to do is approve the meeting's agenda. There is one item that we'll be taking off. During our work session, we had a budget presentation, and so in as much as we've already done that, we're going to take that off. So someone like to make an amendment to the agenda, please?
I move that we remove item number 11, the fiscal year 2015 budget presentation, as that was handled during work session, and approve the rest of the agenda as is.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. All right. Next item is public comments. And so at the beginning of each meeting, then we allow residents to come and take up to 3 minutes, talk about whatever topic they care to choose to talk about. And so we will take care of that first. I know a lot of you have come to talk during the public hearing. And so was there anyone who came specifically to talk during public comments as opposed to the public hearing? Okay, very good.
David, could you give me the sign-up sheet? Thank you.
So if there's no one to give comments during public comments, I'll close that part of the meeting, and we're going to move to the hearing. And so the public hearing is to talk about a preliminary plan for a senior living facility called Rosegate by Blue Line Designs, located approximately 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. Okay. Now, I see that some people have mentioned twice that they want to speak. And so you can speak one time, but you can speak for a longer time than what you normally would. So normally we would allow for 3 minutes in a public comment section. And so looks like everyone signed up to speak twice. And so what I'm going to do is, would you rather speak in public hearing, or would you rather speak specific to item number 8? By a raise of hands, how many of you are wanting to speak in the public hearing? No one? So you're all going to speak then.
Mayor?
Yes.
Number 8 is also about Rosegate.
It is. It's the same topic. It's just a question of whether you want to speak now or whether you want to wait until after the presentation of Blue Line. Okay? Okay. So then we will all wait until then. So no one is here to speak during the public hearing, so I will close the public hearing part of our meeting and move on to our consent agenda. And so when we approved the agenda for this evening, that also included the appointment of some Cedar Hills residents to the Arts Committee. So those people, and I will mention them, most of them are not here tonight, but we've created an Arts Committee for our city to handle our summer concert series, among other things. And so the people on that committee are Stephen Cap Perry, Kurt and Missy Peterson, David Osmond, Jared Osmond, Tom and Rebecca Gleason. So pretty great group of people involved with that. So that's who we just approved. Now, we'll go to our city reports and business. Starting from my left, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start off?
Do we need a motion to approve the consent agenda?
What's that?
I believe we need a motion to approve the consent agenda by the council.
Yes, we do.
Okay. So that is approving the people to the Arts Committee. Is there someone like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Is there a second? It's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Moving on to city manager reports and council reports. So, Mr. Bunker, why don't you go ahead?
Great. The Family Festival Committee has been working diligently to get us going for our Family Festival, and they have met with Macy's, who provided some food services for our festival last year. It was fantastic, and the decision was made to show the movie The Love Bug, which was the original one. Tot Soccer registration is open. We already have over 100 kids enrolled. The registration ends April 9th. And T-ball registration also opens on the 30th. And we're currently working with a few groups to do some free seminars here in the Recreation Center. Representatives from Merrill Lynch will be doing some financial seminars. We also have some nutrition classes that will be starting, and you can get more information on that on the city website. We're still looking for some people to do a photography class and a gardening class, and I know there's people in here who know a lot about gardening. Right? And I'd love to have your help there. Our driving range fence is currently down, but it's getting fixed now, and they're hoping to have that up the first part of April. We've also worked out an agreement with Pleasant Grove Recreation to start a pickleball class, which is a form of tennis. It's kind of ping pong on a tennis court. And so they have open play on Thursdays and Friday evenings. They also do clinics for kids 8 to 14 during April and May. And so contact us for information on that, and we'll get that for you. Also, the Utah League of Cities and Towns will be having their mid-year convention April 9th through the 11th. So if you're interested in that, let us know about that as well.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Zapala.
I had a meeting last week regarding the avalanche that occurred up American Fork Canyon. Many of you probably heard about this. It was in the news recently. We had a meeting with myself and several other board members for Utah Valley Dispatch, as well as Deborah Meekum, who is the director of Utah Valley Dispatch, and several of our fire chief and his assistant fire chief. I have a bunch of notes from the meeting, and I'll be typing up a detailed report for the council and mayor regarding that issue. The primary issue that occurred with that particular call was that for several different reasons, the call was entered in through dispatch as a police call or a search and rescue call, but not also as a medical call. And so ambulance and EMS personnel were not dispatched as quickly as they should have been. Deborah Meekum has taken several steps to remedy that, so that hopefully will not happen again. And I'll give you the details of that incident when I write up a report.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Geddes.
No report.
No report. Lone Peak Public Safety meeting this week, and so Cedar Hills has held that chair position for the last year. It will be going to Alpine this next year, and I'll report back after we have that meeting. Mrs. Reese.
Like David said, the Family Festival Committee is working hard and getting all of their ducks in a row on the committee or on the Fathom Link Festival dates. And they've added this year a service night, and so more information will be coming on that. And that should be, I believe it's going to be Wednesday night. And other than that, I don't have anything else.
Thank you. Mr. Augustus.
The Finance Committee and North Point haven't met since our last meeting. North Point actually has a meeting on Monday, and so I'll report back after our next council meeting. We will be talking about the resolution that we passed last meeting, and so I'll report back on what they have to say about that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah, the Cedar Hills Parks and Trails Committee is meeting tomorrow. But I want to reiterate a couple of things from the last meeting, especially since there's a large crowd today. There's a beautification and service day on May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., so 3 hours. And that's a kind of a cleanup day and service day where we can all get together and help make some yards in this city a little bit better and more beautiful. And we will choose 5 different yards to work on during that day. So that'll be May 3rd in the morning on a Saturday. And the other thing I want to mention from that committee is we are looking for some additional people to serve on that committee. And so if anyone's interested in being part of that committee, we do several things during the year, including Cedar Hills Beautification Day, the City Breakfast, Christmas with Santa, Beautification Awards for homes, Yard of the Month type thing, and Light Up Cedar Hills. So if anyone's interested in being on that committee, we're looking for new members of that committee. And last thing I want to mention is I want to thank the city for giving all residents of Cedar Hills a gift certificate for a free round of golf. I think that gives back for the investment that we've made as a community in the golf course, that gives it back to all the residents a free gift certificate for 18 rounds, and that was in the mailing of the bill this last time. So just wanted to mention that. I think it's a great gesture by the city for the residents. So thank you from the city. So anyway, thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
What did I say? Yeah, rounds.
18 holes, not rounds. I apologize.
Okay. I think I need to clarify about the comments for the item number 8. I was told I didn't make that quite clear enough. In public comments, normally we have a half an hour given, and people can speak up to 3 minutes, which means that there would be a maximum of 10 people that would be able to speak during public comments. I have more than 10 people, so we're going to extend the time on this. So I have a total of 12 people that have signed up. If there's anyone that's not on the list that wants to be, then they need to let me know, or let Mr. Bunker know, and he will let me know. So that will give. Okay. And so that is still three. You have 3 minutes to state what your position is, what your thoughts are. But we have more than half an hour, so we are going to item number 8, which is a review action item on a preliminary plan for a senior living facility. Are you going to be presenting, Corey?
I will. Is Chandler presenting?
Chandler's going to start. Okay.
I'm going to take a few minutes and just address some of the concerns that have come up, and hopefully put out some good, useful information out there. So before you tonight, we've had the plan for the Rosegate facility located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive. It has been to the Planning Commission.
Chandler?
Chandler. Yes.
Can you either speak more closely into the mic or turn up the volume of your mic?
Turn up the volume, it'd be easier.
How's that? So I'll start over. What my aim today is to get some good information out there regarding the plan for the Rosegate facility located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive. The preliminary plan has been before the Planning Commission and has been approved for recommendation to the City Council, and that is the plan that you have before you tonight.
However, the plan that you see before you does not include certain changes that staff has recommended to the developers, namely some engineering changes that would be reflected in later plat iterations. Those include changing some of the sewer lines to go out to 4800 rather than to 4600 West, and then showing that all storm, all the frontage improvements would need to be completed for the entire project as a whole. So really what I wanted to talk tonight about was the financial implications for the city on a project like this. So what I've done is I've done a property tax and sales tax evaluation on this property, and I want to read a quote. Revenue return from property taxes is the missing metric for communities that want to grow in a way that is healthy, balanced, and economically sustainable. That was from Peter Katz. He wrote an article called The Missing Metric in the Government Finance Review. The estimated value of the proposed development at Rosegate is approximately $24 to $30 million. Additionally, based on evaluations of other properties that are similar in nature to this, they are taxed at a full commercial rate, meaning the 100% of the estimated value. On that, a $24 to $30 million building would bring in an estimated $68,000 to $86,000 in property taxes to the city of Cedar Hills. Now, I hate to break it down and sound so mercenary like that, but these things are important to the city. So I think, did you pass that out, David? Yeah. So what you see on that, and this is the information that I'm saying can be found in the city's comprehensive annual financial report. You see the top 10 commercial property taxpayers in the city, and Walmart's obviously the biggest. Their building is estimated at $8 million. Their property tax liability is $23,000. Now, Walmart generates a lot of sales tax for the city, and Walmart's have been a great thing to have in the city. So in order to give an idea of what that amount of property tax would mean to the city, we did a revenue profile for the city. Now, what we did was we got a data set from the county, which had every single parcel in the city, and how it was classed by the county for tax purposes, whether it was residential nursing, residential PUD, residential twin home, residential single, and so forth. Commercial was also one of those. So what we did is we took that information and we took the total acreage and the total tax liability for each one of these zones, and what you can see before you is the actual per acre property tax liability. In a residential single family units, they pay approximately $1,400 per acre in property taxes. Commercial is nearly twice that at $2,700 per acre. The Rosegate facility would be nearly three times the commercial rate at $7,500. So I hear a lot about the strain on the city's infrastructure a building like this would have. But with any development, there is public investment, and there is infrastructure needs needed to be met in order to make any development possible, whether it's this facility or some other commercial development. In the case of the Rosegate facility, the horizontal infrastructure, meaning the roads, the sewer, the water lines, they're already in place. There's no need to dig up a road, extend a sewer pipe, or increase the size of a water line. But the developer, however, is responsible for any improvements on the property itself, which would need to be done. So the city staff, we've reviewed the engineering, and for this development, we've made requests to the developer to make certain adjustments to the proposed engineering, and there are no need for upsizing any line or any public utility. Any on-site infrastructure improvements are the responsibility of the developer. So let me take a second and talk about sales tax, because this is commercial property, and sales tax, any tax revenue is important to the city. But a breakdown of the sales and use tax shows that the combined tax rates for all taxing purposes broken down by cities, for the city of Cedar Hills, we have an effective sales tax rate of 6.85%. Of that, 4.7% goes to the state, 0.25 goes to the county, 0.8 goes to fund transportation, highway, and other infrastructure needs throughout the state, and 0.1% is earmarked for the city of Cedar Hills for care tax. The remaining 1% is divided in half. Half stays at point of sale. The other half goes to the state and is divided among all of the municipalities based on population size. The following example, I want to give an example of what an annual tax liability would be for a business similar in size to the Lexington Heights. We estimated that if someone were to build a commercial property there that's at $2 million, which would be about what Lexington Heights is, you can see on the previous page, their property tax would be about $5,700. If their total monthly revenue was $500,000 at a sales tax rate of 0.0685, which is the city's sales tax rate, their total sales tax collected would be $34,250. Of that, the point of sale that would stay in the city would be $2,300. Over the course of the year, the city could estimate to receive about $28,700. Adding in property tax, you can see that the total annual tax income, both sales use and property, would be $34,500. So you compare that $34,000 to the $86,000 that would be received in property tax, not to mention any marginal benefit that the city would receive from these residents shopping at Walmart and using the other commercial entities that we have in the city. So I wanted to share that information with you because I feel like it's important to have good information when we make decisions like this. I also want to turn the time over to Corey to answer most of the questions and give any presentation that you have. So I'm going to turn the time over to Corey. But
I have a question before yes. You turn it over to Corey, though. Can you talk to me about water?
Water.
In that my understanding is that if this were to go through, then this group would have to purchase water rights.
Yes.
Culinary water rights.
As part of their preliminary packet, they have shown a letter that says that upon final approval, they will convey all of the necessary water rights to the city. And we can't really convey them right now because it's hard to estimate what the water usage will be when we don't quite have the size of the building pinned down. That kind of seems to be the hot topic. So, but they have shown a letter that with the intent to convey those rights to the city once final approval is given.
Okay. Then what impact would it have on pressurized irrigation water? That's one that we are more concerned
That's
about.
A good question as well. If you look at the building, and then you'll see it when we pull it up, it's got various wings. In between each wing is, I think it's about a half acre of green space. This half acre of green space, I think it totals in between the buildings 1.5 acres, and then the green space surrounding the facility. I'm not really sure what that is. Do you know what it is, Corey?
I don't. Off the top of my head, I don't.
No. So, but I mean, as far as pressure in that area, I think pressure is something we have too much of it in that low of the zone, far down the hill. But we also have the PI usage, assuming that people use what they need to use, not what they would wish to use. But you know, everyone could probably do with a little bit less PI watering. But I think our city infrastructure, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, our PI usage would be able to handle a property like this.
Yeah, the demand on the pressurized irrigation is not going to be significant because it's in the commercial zone. Typically, commercial entities use a lot less pressurized irrigation because they have limited outdoor landscaping.
And I believe that Chandler said that the demand on culinary would not be significant because they have to buy their own water rights.
Right.
Correct?
We would enter into an agreement, a development agreement, that they would bring all the necessary water, outdoor and indoor, both, and turn over to the city. And that would be a requirement.
Very good. Thank you.
Are there any other questions I can answer? Okay. I'll turn the time over to Corey.
Thanks, Chandler. For the record, my name is Corey Shoup. I'm with Blue Line Designs. We've been asked by the developer to look at this property. By profession, we are planners and landscape architects. Building cities is what we do, and we work with developers. And it's been a great process working with Cedar Hills. For those of you in the congregation or meeting with us tonight, I'm planning on giving just a little bit of background but not all of the background, because it's been 6-8 months of working back and forth with the Planning Commission and with the residents in this area to get to this final point. And what we're hoping to accomplish tonight, as you know, we're hopeful that that we can demonstrate the true value of this commercial project in your city and how it will benefit the entire commercial area of Cedar Hills.
Because we have a large turnout, what we'd like to do is be able to take in all the public input and table.
Okay.
Just because there's a lot of people and we want to get their input.
Great. We have now. Great. Doug's just mentioning, noticing how many people are here tonight, as we have in the past. We've always taken all of the public input, and we're welcome to that direction. And quite frankly, that's how we've gotten to the point that we are tonight. And so we would propose tonight that we get all of the public information and table it and make a decision so that we can ensure, as the developer and designer, that we're getting all the information from the residents as possible. So that's our proposal. What I would like to do is, for those of you that this may be your first time, is maybe just walk you through the project briefly without taking a ton of time. What you see here, I've got two lasers, and that's why I'm juggling a little bit. This one I think is a little easier to see than the red one, so I've got one on my left and one on my right, so pardon me if I start pointing and clicking and shooting lasers everywhere. This is the project right here. This is what we refer to as Rose Gate at Cedar Hills. This is the Walmart located right here. This is the beginning of your commercial zone. This is Cedar Hills Drive and 4800 West right here. The area that you see grayed out underneath or masked out is the greater commercial area of Cedar Hills. And I'll go through this in a kind of step-by-step phasing that will hopefully illustrate just how important a facility like this is to your commercial district. What we have here, for those that have not seen them to date, this is an illustration that we have worked with the Planning Commission and the neighbors at a number of iterations to get to something that would feel more Cedar Hills-esque, with the darker brick that runs very high on the structure. This is known as a porte-cochere. You can see the cars pull up under. It's covered. Makes it quite convenient and nice for those that are visiting and coming to and fro to the project, that they can get in here out of the elements. It's a four-story structure. These elements up here are really purely just architectural and add interest to the building. This is located on the northwest corner of the building. The porte-cochere, where we were just looking, is right here. This area, we've worked back and forth with Planning Commission, City Council, and residents on trying to incorporate a portion of retail into this corner. And there's even been some discussion about turning a portion of this into a small library. This is a little difficult to see. Let me back up and just kind of help you understand where we're looking from. Back to the plan view, where we're looking is from this corner of this building back to these residents, okay? So if we forward now back to that drawing, you can see here's an existing residence. Here's the fence line. We have some garage elements that will be the back door neighbor to the existing residence. And then the building is located nearly 170 feet away from the property line. And it's a two-tiered building at this point. This is a three-level structure. That was also a recommendation from some residents and Planning Commission. And so we've dropped it down at this level, and it's very difficult to see, but there are two very light gray lines that go here. One leads to a person standing in the backyard of this existing residence. That's the sight line, which goes up and over the building. from the roof of that garage back to the person. And then there's a trail that you'll see later on that goes between the backs of the garages and the existing residents. And that other sight line shows another person's visual there, and it hits right to the very tip of the building right there. So you can see that the building is not encroaching. One of our first couple of iterations, we had the building tucked up much closer to the residents, but in working with the people that live here and around the bend here, we've reoriented the building and pushed it further to the north, and it's completely out of the sight line as you stand in the backyard. This too is a little difficult to see just because it's so small on the screen, but there are a number of yellow lines that go around the property and link from the property to the south that indicate trail systems. There's a half-mile trail loop that works its way all the way around the outside of the property, and along that trail loop in these four areas that we've blown up, there are these active exercise pullouts. These are elements that we've used in other developments that we've done that are very attractive and heavily used, and part of our working with the residents and the Planning Commission is how we came up with these, and they were very interested in them, and it will really add to the interconnectivity and the walkability of the community. This is a typical, it's not right here, this is not the project back here, but this is a drawing that is a typical trail cross-section of what we have done in other projects. Now, as we're kind of familiar with where the project is, what the scale of the project is, what we would really like to focus on now is, why is it so important to Cedar Hills Commercial Zone to have a project like this? As you all are aware, this is the Walmart, and we consider this as we try to step back as planners, designers, and people who build communities. We stepped way out of the box and said, okay, how can this project, how can the commercial zone in Cedar Hills really get some motion to move forward? This was your first great move, Walmart. What a great generator. Walmart's not always welcome in communities. We are all aware of that. But I think Cedar Hills can see the value of having a facility like that, and how it generates great taxes and really benefits the community as a whole. So this is what we consider to be phase one as we looked at how can Cedar Hills really generate what they need to generate in order to have a commercial zone that's vibrant and functional. This would be phase two. So phase one is Walmart here. Phase two is the Hartz gas station that exists. This is the building, and this is the gas pumps out front. And what you're going to see as we go through these next few slides is this greater area, how it starts to phase itself down to the core commercial area. This would be phase three, and this is our project. And why is it so important to have a project, a commercial project, like this one? You can see, and you're aware, that this is a commercial project that is a senior 55 plus, a congregate care facility is what it is. And it is not an apartment project. This is privately funded, but we are held to federal guidelines of HOPA, which is Housing for Older Persons Act of 1995. And we operate purely and strictly under those guidelines, and we are held to those guidelines. There has been some concern that we've heard bouncing around that, you know, this is a residential project that is an apartment project, and anyone can come and live here. That is not true. There's many restrictions upon who can come here and how it will function. And we'll get into more about what is contained within the facility. These are the half-acre parks in between the wings. But you can see what is so important about what we've tried to do in working with the city here is we didn't come in and just ignore the greater picture. we work diligently in working with the city on coming up with this critical intersection. This is directly across from the Walmart. It's on our property here, and what we've done is we've created a main street that tees off of that intersection and works its way right down into the core of your future commercial area. The other critical element to creating a vibrant commercial zone in Cedar Hills, and you'll hear this from any retail or commercial real estate person, is people. You've got to have the people. You could build the world's greatest commercial zone, but if you don't have the people, then how can you keep it alive? It'll go dark. And what is so significant about this type of a facility is not only are we bringing the people, we're bringing a demographic of people, 55 plus, that are independent, active, vibrant people. This is not an assisted living where everyone's in beds and having 24/7 care. But these people come with their disposable income to spend at the Walmart, and they increase the numbers, rooftops, if you will, that draw retail commercial developers that need to see that there is enough activity that they could make their commercial business thrive. The other factor is, and we'll get into this, is the impact, the positive impact of what these residents bring to Cedar Hills. So that's phase three, and that's why this is so important, is creating the density without creating the impact. And I guess I can go into it a little bit right now, but the impact where these people, they live close, it's walkable, it's difficult to build a commercial center and not overdo the traffic. We've done the traffic studies on these. This is not the first facility we've built. We know that not every unit here is going to have a car, but right now we're parked at over one per unit. And the impact to the road system will be minimal because of the walkability, and many of the residents that live here don't require cars. So, phase four. And this is into the city right now. This is the AmSource piece, and you can see if I back up, what's important is that intersection right there. The AmSource piece, which is in and going through the approval process right now, these commercial buildings rely heavily upon that intersection and this main street that we've designed, and we've worked with AmSource in making sure that this is functional and will work for both. And then phase four, this same street and that same intersection will feed the back of Hearts, this commercial area and also this commercial area. And by the time that intersection's in, phase three, our project is going, AmSource phase four and Hearts phase five, half of your main street is constructed and ready to go. And now we're looking at, boy, we've got rooftops, we've got some other commercial, and now we can start to focus on a commercial retail center. We've got the people, including these, we've got the walkability, and now retailers will start to have comfort and confidence in the fact that they could bring something in here and have the people to support it without getting gobbled up. These are extremely difficult to read, and I didn't bring a printed out version. But Rosegate will jumpstart the retail development, and that's what I've been trying to say over the last 15 minutes as I've talked about why this project is important, why the people that live there are important, the numbers of people that will live there are important, and the types of people. The use is very compatible. We can't put another Walmart against a Walmart. Walmart is a great facility, but it's also difficult to be a little guy next door to Walmart, okay? And it makes it difficult to start a boutique, if you will, next door to Walmart. They already carry what you've got, and they carry it for half the price, and they can get it in twice as fast as you can. But it is a comparable. Our commercial project is a benefit to Walmart and will be a benefit to future retailers and commercial outfits. This line is difficult, but this is what Chandler was trying to outline. You know, based on, we backed ours off a little bit. Chandler, I think, was saying at $30 million, this building's estimated to be somewhere between 24 and 30 million. So we took kind of the middle ground and said, on an annual basis, the property tax alone on this building will generate $80,000 annually that goes directly to the city. That's a true benefit. To put a subway in there, you're not going to get that kind of a return on it. The other line that's important that I don't remember Chandler bringing up is the taxes that will go from this facility, Phase 3, Rosegate, to the school district, Alpine School District, on an annual basis is estimated in the neighborhood of $260,000. And the true benefit to that is we're creating zero impact on the schools. We're bringing 55 plus without any children with disposable income, and the project will generate over $250,000 a year that will go into the school district. That's a true benefit. Low traffic impact, I brought that up before in the sense that not all of the residents that live here own and drive cars. Minimal impact to the public utilities, that was already discussed. Chandler brought that up. We will purchase water rights, as it does any commercial project that comes in. We'll have to purchase the water rights to offset. We will do that. Minimal impact to public safety. This was a concern that some brought up. There are a couple other assisted living facilities in town, which is a higher care facility where emergency vehicles are called on a pretty regular basis. We have a facility similar to what we're doing here in Sandy. We called and got the numbers for 2013. In the year 2013, 4 emergency calls and 2 deaths in the building. They were older residents, died of natural causes, were not on hospice. So a total of 6 phone calls, 6 responses to that building in a 12-month period. So the impact on the public safety is going to be minimal. If you were to take 300 homes in the community, my guess is you're going to get at least 4 phone calls in a 12-month period. And I couldn't even speculate how many deaths. It depends on the age group of the people living there. We've talked a little bit about this. Increase in residents population with disposable income. I don't think we can tout that enough. These are active 55-plus residents that have disposable income that are going to benefit your city. Enhance the walkability. We did go over the plan, the trails plan, and how it will link. I didn't talk probably enough about the plans to link that to the south, to 9900 South, I believe the road is. And then finally, the Rosegate facility amenities. There's been some discussion about, you know, what if my mom or my dad or my parents are living here and we want to get together for a family reunion or together on Sunday. All of these units have their own kitchen and laundry and everything. But what we've done is we've gone and grabbed some photos from one of our smaller units in Sandy. It's a little difficult to see, but this is a great room with a kitchen. The countertop here, and it goes back. There's a baby grand piano back in that corner, and I think I have another photo of that. But there are a number of spaces within the building, within the facility, for the residents as amenities. So when they want to schedule a family reunion, they schedule it, and they have all these to their disposal. They're really wide open and great spaces. This is in that same room. You just can't see it in the photo because the photo lens isn't big enough. But fireplace, lounge area. Here's the baby grand piano that was at the opposite end of that room. They're very well done. Like was mentioned, it's anticipated that the value of this building is going to be in the neighborhood of $30 million, $24 to $30 million. This is a genealogical room, which is one that we have in our Sandy facility. Where residents can go in. They have computers in here, and they have people that can help them with her genealogy. That's it's a big thing here in Utah. We all know that, and it was something that was sought after here, and so we have that. This is one of the gyms that's there, an active room, exercise room, and there are a number of other rooms that I didn't get pictures of. For example, theater rooms and other gathering rooms, et cetera, et cetera. So, and again, we're just ending on this picture here. I'm sure there are a number of things that I've missed. Doug, are there other items that you want to talk about?
Doug Young, Salt Lake City. There's just two things I wanted to clarify on the facility, that it is a congregate care facility, and there's been a concern that, you know, after a two-year period or after a certain period of time, that this could revert back to a regular apartment or that type of a complex. I wanted to clear that up, that this is a 55-plus community here, and if, and we're restricted not only by federal guidelines, but also we're restricted by city approvals, that's how that facility would need to remain. And so that was a misunderstanding. The other thing was, is this going to be subsidized? Are any of the seniors in here, is the landing on it, is there any subsidies going on here with the residents? And the answer to that is no. This is a market rate, and actually we require, and all these people here have a high standard of living, monthly incomes. We also regulate these facilities. We have a zero tolerance for anybody that comes into a facility like this that has that is a felon. In fact, we do a one-on-one study if they even have a misdemeanor. And so we can regulate these facilities, which is a great thing to be able to do because it ensures that you have good neighbors and neighbors in the community. Unlike a residential community where somebody can move into your neighborhood, you don't know who they are, and you can't regulate them, this also helps us to do this. And I'm so excited that we have so many people here today and the input that we can get from the public. This has been the best turnout, and we've had two or three public hearings that we've had, and we would really like to be able to take the input from the community, redigest that, and then bring it back and be able to table this recommendation. And thank you.
Doug, can I press you on one point you
made? Yeah.
So one of the points you made was you claimed it won't revert back.
Correct.
To a younger demographic.
Correct.
So I just want you to envision this for just a moment, because I know every developer who does something is going to say, yeah, we're going to fill this building, right?
Uh-huh.
But let's imagine with 300 units, you only get 100 to 150 filled, and you're really struggling financially.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine the pressure would be on you to say, look, we're going to need to go to the city council. We know there was an agreement that we made, but let's get the council to vote on that and change the restrictions that are on this building, because it's the only way we're going to survive financially. No one wants an empty building like an Orem, right? So
right.
Maybe you could speak to, isn't that a possibility? Whether that's 5 years down the road or 6 or 7 years down the road, that's certainly something that could happen.
Yeah, I think that's something, and I appreciate you bringing that up. That's an important factor. In order to be able to finance a building like this, you have to really be able to write a check for a building like this. Banks don't lend money on this unless you're financially solid to be able to do that. We're financially solid and can see this building through at the 55. We don't want the younger crowd there. We don't have it parked for the younger crowd. And as soon as you had 100 people in there that are 55 and older, and you start bringing people in that are younger than that, then you've got all kinds of problems. You've got litigation problems. You've got all kinds of problems. Now, let's say, for example, by some chance I got hit by a bus. The partners in this thing got hit by a bus. Everybody was dead. The bank all of a sudden has this facility. Well, they're required to keep it at the 55 and plus because that's the way it's set up and committed to by the city and by the federal guidelines. And say there was $30 million owed on it. What would happen? Well, if everybody was dead and gone, the bank steps in. The people continue to make their lease payments, and the bank hires a management company, and they would continue to run it. So I'm confident that not only do we want it, we insist that through the approval process, when the city makes their recommendation for approval on this project, that it's required by not only to follow the federal guidelines, but also that we are required to maintain the federal guidelines by approval through the city of Cedar Hills.
Sure, I understand, but a future city council would be under some pretty significant pressure if the choice was empty building versus let's give on that requirement, let's redo it as a different sort of building.
I don't think a city could do that, because they would require over, if it went to a facility like that, they would have to require over 2 units parking. It would be a catastrophe. There would not be enough parking there to accommodate that. And if somebody was in trouble like that, then it would go back to the bank. The bank would then reduce it down, the mortgage on it, and they would have to run it as that. So I don't see it ever, at any point or time, ever reverting back to anything other than a 55 plus.
I have a question for you also.
Yeah.
One of the statements made that I questioned was the number of cars per unit. And most of the 55 plus active seniors I know do drive a car, and oftentimes there's 2 cars in a couple that's 55 plus. So I don't see that many 55 plus that don't have a car. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Sure. Thank you, Rob. You know, I felt the same way that you did. And in fact, the first facility that we put in like this, I said, and you could ask Ryan, I said, you got to be kidding, because I'm like you. I have a car. My wife has a car. I'm 56, and I would say the same thing. The demographics that you get here are 56, and a lot of them hit into the 60s and 70s. And the facility, that, for example, that we have in Sandy, we're parked right now at 0.75. So we actually have about 25% of the parking left there, and it's surprising that how many people rely on mass transit or just one car for their trafficking. And it's been studied not only here, but across America, and we've done a traffic study on it, and we will not fill the parking stalls in this facility.
How many stalls are there? I forget.
There's almost 400.
That's what
it's so like. It's like 1.25, which we're already overparked by about 20%. So
Doug, can you talk a little bit more to that mass transit? Because as you know, we're not in front of a track station here.
Correct.
So how would that be handled from Cedar Hills' perspective?
Well, that's a really good point, because mass transit is really important to the seniors. And you do have a pickup out front in front of the Walmart area. And what we do with other facilities is we contact UTA. We've contacted them on this facility. And you can arrange smaller bus pickups. And depending on the volume, will depend on how often they'll pick them up in front of the facility. And hopefully, the idea though is that they'll do all their shopping at Walmart, and for the bulk, and then they'll go to the other shopping areas around the county. But thank you for that question.
Could I ask one question that maybe clarify a little bit for some of the residents and the comments I've heard over the last month or so?
Sure.
A portion of this, in fact, there's 2 pads that are a part of your master plan that are dedicated strictly commercial pads. Is that correct?
Yes, out front of the building.
West of your building.
Yes.
So there's 2 pads, and then a portion of the northwest corner will be designated as commercial, of which you can't say what would be there, but it's probably like a hair salon and some type of commercial that would be in
an
insurance agency or something like that.
Right.
About how much square footage do you have slated for commercial?
Well, that's what we were going to – I appreciate you bringing that up. I don't know the exact square footage, but the entire corner of the building would be commercial. And then the other thought that has come up recently is the library. There's been a big push to create a community library within this facility. And so we're also looking at that. And I think that's why it's so important that we have the time to digest what the public hearing has and the points that you're bringing up, and so we can kind of look at it as a whole, and we can bring that back to you in a few weeks and give you the exact numbers on it.
One other study that I spent a fair amount of time this week trying to analyze heights, and that seems to be a big concern.
Uh-huh.
And I look at the grading plan of the site, and it looks like there's 10 to 12 feet of fall, believe it or not, from the north to the south.
Right.
So either that's going to be split, or you're going to take up a half a story somewhere. Is that correct?
What we're going to do is we're going to nestle the building down into the ground.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, and we have to keep it perfectly flat for the ADA, well, pretty close to perfectly flat for the ADA requirements, but we're actually going to nestle the building down into the ground.
So if in effect what that will do is lessen the height of the overall from the north curb, is that correct then? Essentially, if you if you pull that down 6
absolutely,
or 7 feet.
Yes, it will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How can
thank
you nestle
you.
It down and have it be flat? I don't
well, you kind of, the slope of the ground, it's like a 12-foot slope, believe it or not, from basically from the east to the west. Mm-hmm. And so on the east side, you nestle it down. You pull it down into the ground.
Oh,
so it flattens it out.
Okay.
And so
maybe the next time a cross section of that would be helpful.
I think it would be helpful, and that's something we could bring back. We could. Thank you.
Any other questions from council? Doug, are you still going on the? Is Corey, you still presenting?
I think we've wrapped up.
Okay.
So we'd like to turn the time over and thank you. And I'd just like to beforehand thank the residents for coming. And we've always had a very friendly, respectful dialogue with the residents. Mayor, I've appreciated everything that you've done in coordinating it with the residents. And any helpful ideas or hints or discussion, we would very much welcome from the residents of Cedar Hills. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Council, if there's no more questions, then I'm going to open it up for the public hearing.
Will
we
be able
to ask questions afterwards?
Yeah, I was going to say, we can address our questions afterwards.
You can still ask questions after.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any now, then we'll
save them until later.
Okay, so I'm going to mention two names, and someone will be at the mic. The next person's on deck. So, and when you come up, if you could please state your name and your address. First is Nathan Gibbons. Second is Deborah Gibbons. You have 3 minutes.
Nathan Gibbons, and I'm at 4601 Spruce Circle. Thank you.
I will keep it time here, so
that's
if you want to look at.
Thanks. I do appreciate all the effort and time that's been put into this. I mean, it's clear that this is this is not just a quick thing, and developers have done a great job designing a beautiful facility. I don't know that there'd be any argument with that. But I've heard comments like low impact, minimal impact, zero impact, and I don't think a four-story building is any of those things. So my argument with this is just it may be beautiful, but it doesn't fit in Cedar Hills. I don't know how any other way to put it. I did some driving around to see what four-story buildings look like, or even 3.5 or 3, and it's too much. It's too high. I've seen the facility in Sandy, and it's a nice-looking facility, but it fits in Sandy. It doesn't fit in Cedar Hills. If this was a 100-unit facility with enough car spaces, then I think that'd be something that would make sense to consider. I like the idea of a master plan. But if we have a problem in Cedar Hills with tax issues, the way to fix a problem is not with another problem. And I'm afraid there are far too many issues at hand here. This would be the next problem we'd have. So I urge the City Council to reject this, and if it requires going back to the drawing board and making it smaller and making it more compact, making it fit into Cedar Hills, then that makes sense. I know that there are a developer needs to fund it and make money, and that's likely why it's gotten its size. But again, that's not the city of Cedar Hills' problem. So to fix that with a big building like this just creates another problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah Gibbons and then Devin Baldwin.
Deborah Gibbons, 4601 Spruce Circle. Today I was also in Orem driving through. Those four-story apartments dwarf everything else around them. Orem is still a big city. This one has been compared to the building in Sandy. We've heard that. I was at the planning committee last time. Sandy, their apartment complex, their units, their 55 and older, is 100 to 150 units. And ours is right now scheduled to be 300. Sandy population is 90,000 residents approximately. They are also, what we already discussed, they're by public transportation, they're by shops. Everything is very close, so that makes a lot of sense. Cedar Hill's population is approximately 10,000. That if this building could fill, that seems like a really big if to me, 10% of Cedar Hill's population would be on that corner. And that seems like a really strange way to plan a city, to have that much population right there on the corner. I think also one of my biggest concerns is with 55 and older, the cars that we were talking about, I live just down the street from that. There is not a lot for them to walk to. The idea that they're just going to walk to Walmart and enjoy that doesn't seem to be very realistic. Two cars is very realistic. If families come to visit, where are they going to park? There's already not actually enough parking for an apartment, for regular apartments to have two cars per apartment complex. And finally, I guess my biggest thing is commercial brings commercial. What we've seen is you see commercial all gathered together. The people are already here. Either the apartment complex is so huge that that number of people is going to impact our city so much that now the commercial wants to come, or it's not going to impact us that much. And so how is that going to bring us commercial? Commercial areas develop because the commercial, they build on each other. There's been talk about over in Highland, possibly across from the high school, some development being built there. That would actually be more commercial to our side of the street, too, because commercial, people like to go to one area and be able to do a whole bunch of things. I don't see how an apartment complex with more, I mean, people are here, Cedar Hills citizens, we are already here. So that is, those are some of my main concerns, the huge size of the building. 50 to 100 apartments seems like it's a little more worth talking about. Thank you.
Devin Baldwin, then Corey Olson.
My name is Devin Baldwin. I live at 10373 Bridgewater Circle. So I have been approaching this from the standpoint of my parents are aging to live up in Idaho. There's nobody in my family who lives there with them. I am actually excited for a place like this to come to Cedar Hills. However, I don't think this is quite what they need, and this is why. Number one, they have two cars, so they're already over their capacity there. Number two, there aren't a lot of places for them to go close except for Walmart and my house, which I don't mind parents visiting my house. Don't get me wrong, I love my parents. I don't think that the commercial zone has been developed quite enough to support those who walk. I also I'm concerned at the size. I think that if this was a much smaller facility, I can see the success, and I can see it succeeding very, very well and very quickly. Something this size, I'm concerned that it won't fill quite like has been planned, and that it will eventually turn over the bank. And I appreciate Mr. Young, thank you for talking about the postmortem guarantees for this system. I'm not sure if I trust the bank like I trust these guys. I don't want to place my bet on the bank right now. If the bank has the opportunity of keeping it as a 55 and older that is at half capacity, or turning it over to someone else and maybe changing the zoning so that it can be less people, smaller families. Again, we all know that that is not a winning business plan. And so I'm just concerned that it won't meet capacity, and so my parents would be stuck in a place that doesn't meet their needs even worse. So that's all I have. I'll leave the remaining time for Corey. Thank you.
Thank you. Corey Olson, and then Marilyn Groneman.
My name is Corey Olson. I live at 10387 Bridgewater Circle. I love Cedar Hills. I live here. My family lives here. We love the community. We love the family values that are here. I do not believe that a structure of this size represents the family and community values that we have here in Cedar Hills. I'd be very much agreeable to looking at something that was within the city guidelines of two stories. I do not believe that we need to compromise at all on those city guidelines. Also, it's been noted that it's tough to bring in a commercial and nobody wants to be first, and that there is competition from Highland. So I say, if nobody wants to be first, let Highland be first. Let them make the first mistake. We'll bring in the right one. I see no reason for us to rush in this decision. I love the field that's there. I run by it all the time. It doesn't bother me at all. It's actually quite pleasant. I really feel like this is four stories, but the elevation adds at least another story and a half. It's just too big. It's too big for me. I know that I vote, and the residents, we can vote based on our values and our core beliefs, and that legally you guys are bound by certain guidelines and restrictions. So I would just urge you to think of those guidelines that the city has set up and vote based on those guidelines. Thank you.
Thank you. Marilyn Groneman and then Martin Johnson.
Marilyn Groneman, 10286 Forest Creek Drive. I don't have that much to say. I am super concerned actually about the size of the building. Even if it was one third the size and the number, then maybe I could swallow it. But frankly, I moved to Cedar Hills. I could have bought the same size house. In fact, I left a house in American Fork that was bigger, had more than twice as much land. I paid $40,000 more to live in half as much space in Cedar Hills because the quality is better here than what we were living at in American Fork. I don't want that ruined by high-density housing. And I would rather see it stay vacant until an interested commercial property can be developed there. I don't see that we need to have high-density housing here. That's not what we moved here for. And I would prefer that it just remain an empty lot. And yes, I realize we need a higher tax base, but I would rather continue paying the taxes I'm paying than to ruin our community with something we don't want. My husband and I are both, he's 59, I'm 58, and we both have cars. I don't have a job outside the home, so you might think, she's not going to need a car. I use my car all the time, and there's no way I would want to have to take him to Novell so that I could use a car. I think that the people that move there, most of them are going to want two cars because this isn't Sandy, and we do have places that we need to go. So that's about all I have to say.
Martin Johnson, and then I can't read the name, but I think it's Mrs. Johnson.
You should let her go first. But thank you. I'm Martin Johnson. I live on 4515 Downing. I'm one of the fortunate over 55 that lives in Cedar Hills. As I look around, it's a lot lower than that age. My mind is very active and very strong. My body is a little bit weaker than 55. I look at the traffic, the impact that it has as I see our youth and our young people walking from Lone Peak High School into the Cedar Hill area from that area. I see them walk on both sides of the street. I know that even though my mind is alert, I think I can drive very well. But I know that I probably don't have the reaction and the sense that I did when I was under 55. And that concerns me a little bit of the impact that it has on our youth and our young people around there. The other impact that I know is there, and I'm not an ecclesiastical leader, but a member of the prominent LDS church, and you put 300 plus people, there's quite an impact that's going to be making on that facility and in our community. And I always wonder about that. As you walk around the roundabout, which would be close by there, and that roundabout will be busier at all times with the people coming in and out. They're always not going to come out of this project and make a left turn to go to the stoplight and get on the main highway there. And going around that's going to impact that also, that intersection tremendously, I think. And with some of the younger children walking to the elementary school just east of that, there's going to be another impact there. And I'm quite concerned about that because I'm aware of what that situation is. The other situation that I see is needed is the height also. And it's been taken up with the people ahead of me so far that have talked about it, and I'm in full agreement with that. But I think it needs to look at some of the situation a little bit better as to the type of development that could be put there in a way that would be more suitable to meet the needs of everybody, not just the 55 and year old. We came from Ogden area and had a chance in my move a little bit to live in what was the LDS Temple Apartments, just adjacent around to the Ogden Temple. It was a three-story facility, I think. I don't know if you're familiar with that up there or not. But, they wanted elderly people to live there also. But again, they ran into a situation to where they had to have younger people come in. And some of those younger people, they had to get out. And so it was quite a concern at that time when we lived there for just 6 months. But it was there that we felt the impact of the problems that came up with. So I'm opposed of this particular position, but not opposed to the development that could be done.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Johnson. And
I'm Tana Johnson.
Thank you. I'm sorry. And then Lance Allen.
I'm Tana Johnson. I live with my husband at 4515 West Downing. I just wanted to tell you, I am 70 years old. At 55 years old, which was 15 years ago, we were very active. We had six children. We had five in our home. Children come back. And with the economy in this world today, I want to tell you they're going to come back. So there's going to be children that are maybe 15 if you had your babies at 40, like I did, some of them. And so my concern basically tonight is that this is too tall and it is just too many people in one area. That's my opinion. 55 years old, okay. I've been driving for over 50 years. This is not going to be enough parking. If you have 300 units, two people, you're going to have 600 cars. That you may even have more if there's children. My concern is the schools. There's an elementary school, as you know, and a high school. As my husband said, we are very concerned about the youth. Most people at 55, you would think, are very stable. Well, we found ourselves in a situation that we were not stable because we had to sell our home. We found another job in Utah. We came from Idaho. And what happened was we lived in these Temple apartments for 6 months until we could find another place. We wound up at the barn in Pleasant View. We lived there for quite a while until we moved to Cedar Hills 3 years ago. Even at the barn on the golf course, as beautiful as it was, the white barn, they had in their bylaws said that there would not be more than people 55 and older. And let me tell you, I do not trust the bank. These gentlemen, I'm sure, have very good intentions, but with our economy, even though it's good in Utah right now, more children are moving back home. My point is that there's going to be more cars, more traffic for the little small children in elementary and even the high schoolers. And that's my opinion. And so I am totally against this project being so tall and so big and so many people for this community that we moved in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lance Allen and then Jared Bradley.
Hi, I'm Lance Allen. I live at 10215 Forest Creek in Cedar Hills. I've lived here about 14 years. Love the town, love the city. The wife and I are part of that 55 and older generation with kids in the basement. So we know how homes and things can expand sometimes when you don't plan on it. We've been blessed to have 5 daughters, and each of them have had an opportunity to live in our home for a period of time while they save money for their own homes. And so that's something we did, and I would assume in a 55 and older residence area, that's something that they would do too. If I don't know if that's permissible or how that works, but I worked in the care facility, served in the care facility that's across from this vacant lot for a number of years, and that two-story facility is pretty large when you get in there. And I just can't imagine a four-story unit in approximately the same area. From people I've talked to, residential development does not develop the revenues that commercial development does. In Cedar Hills, we're kind of landlocked with what we have. It's important that the next decision we make is the best we can. And I'm not against development. I want to see commercial areas. When I moved in, my taxes were $1,400 a year. They're now over $2,000 a year. And they seem to just keep going up. So I want to see commercial areas develop, but I want to see it done responsibly. And I think that you'll all consider that when you're making your decisions. I see, this is my first time to even see about this development, and it's progressed a lot from what I can see. They've made a very nice presentation. I'm concerned about the 4 stories. I'm concerned about the fire aspect of that. If we don't have a hook and ladder tall enough to get to the top of that thing. I know somebody said that, well, the fire chief has looked at it and there's going to be hose connections inside the hallways with pipes running up. Well, I come from earthquake country, California, 20 years ago. We were in major earthquakes. If you've got an earthquake city where a hallway is shut down and a fire, there's no way you're going to get to those people. So you have to have, or your city is going to be at liability if we don't make sure that they're taken care of. So I am, I guess, against this facility as it's proposed. It would be better if it was smaller. I would be more inclined to go with a more commercial aspect for the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Jared Bradley, and then Julie Sessions.
Good evening. My name is Jared Bradley. I'm on 4445 West Windsor Street. Pretty much everything that I wanted to say has already been said. I wanted to actually see, for myself, I'm a visual guy. I wanted to see really, what this facility would kind of look like and try to visualize it in that space. So I went up to the Sandy location. And flat out, that is just a huge building. And I also learned that it's 159 units, of which 65 of those are doubles. And so if you think about, it's almost double the size of that building in Sandy. Even if it was lowered a little bit, that's just flat out a huge building. And I think that would not fit in well with what Cedar Hills is all about. I mean, think about the restrictions that we put on Walmart, the front of it. The building in Sandy, and from the renditions I've seen, it looks beautiful. It looks like it's very well done. I think the entire community would benefit from the trails and the taxes. I'm not concerned at all about that. I'm just worried about the long-term fit of how it would look in that space, surrounded even by the three-story dentist building, I think it would just totally dwarf it. So that's my primary concern. With all due respect, one of the comments tonight was, it's critical to commercial zone is the people, and we bring the people. Well, I disagree with that. You know, the 3,800 to 600 people that's projected to come to that building is not going to make or break the commercial zone. What's going to make or break the commercial zone is not only the citizens of Cedar Hills frequenting the shops in the commercial zone, but also the people in the communities, Pleasant Grove and Highland, all coming here. So I think we should focus on something that is going to actually attract people from other communities as well as everybody from Cedar Hills. You know, this commercial zone can't be totally focused on the 500 people that are going to be in this building. If we had something commercial like entertainment oriented, a movie theater, something like that, that is going to attract other people, that's going to have a lot more impact on this commercial zone than the 500 or 600 people in that 55 plus facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie Sessions and then Angela Johnson.
Hi, thank you all for your thoughtful consideration. Last meeting when I came, I was so impressed with the questions that were asked. It really reflected that you were also very concerned about the residents and their concerns and questions, and I was just very impressed, left very encouraged because of that. And I would just like to ask that once again that you listen to the residents here tonight and their concerns. I think there are many reasons that why the risks outweigh the benefits that were presented tonight, and won't go through all of those, but my biggest concern is also the size. It doesn't matter how nice it is and even how much money it generates if it simply does not fit in that spot. And the Walmart and surrounding buildings and the way they've been constructed, they fit so nicely. It looks wonderful, and I just hope that that is not ruined, and I feel like it would be with a building of that size and magnitude. We also moved here instead of Highland, instead of any of the surrounding cities, because of the feel here, the small feel. And also 5:30 this morning, the other day, I ran past that field and thought, I love that field, and just anyway, knew that if there was a humongous building, it would block the view of all the mountains and things around. And so, again, I think the idea of a senior facility is wonderful at the size of two stories or below. And if that doesn't fit in with the budget or how it would work for them, then I would much prefer to see a field there for a lot longer time. I love seniors. I just helped my parents purchase a home right here. My parents are very humble people, both over the age of 80, but Bridgestone was even too small for them and their two cars, and so they actually purchased a home, and they wanted to be closer to the temple, closer to grandchildren. And are very excited to be here. But again, I just feel like that building and trying to fill it, I just can't even imagine that many 300 apartments, and that size is completely a monstrosity in my opinion. I'm so thankful though for all of you for being where you are, for all that you do. It's absolutely incredible. I admire you and appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Angela Johnson and then Bobby Signaler.
Hi, Angela Johnson, 9676 North Winchester Drive. So I'm not going to repeat. Obviously, many of us feel many of the same things, so I won't repeat a lot of that. But I guess I would just ask, is there a chance that the developer would be able to build a two-story complex? Certainly, obviously, the goal is to make money, and I get that, but I just think, couldn't they make money with a two-story complex? That's kind of what I'm hoping. I think we can kind of see that a lot of the residents are just saying, we want to be able to see that skyline. We don't want something quite so tall. I think most residents want something there at some point. That would be nice. But some questions I'm just thinking about is, you know, do most residents want 300 units there? And it doesn't appear that that's a very popular idea. And would everybody be happy with 150 units in a two-story building? It sounds like we probably would. And would the developer make enough, kind of some questions. And would it bring in enough revenue? Obviously, it'd probably be about half of what they said, but would that be enough? Would it keep us from having some of these traffic issues that we're kind of worried about, the height issues, again, our view of what we're seeing. And so in my mind, I think two stories seems reasonable. A friend had gone and seen the Sandy complex, and after hearing that it's half the size, and to them it was massive. They're like, it's massive when they drove by. I obviously haven't seen it myself, but I just can't picture it there by Walmart, towering over Walmart, this one-story building. Again, kind of, I feel like we're losing that small town feel. And I just feel like if the developer says, no, we can't do two stories, then we'll just have to wait until the next person comes. Thank you.
Bobby Siegmiller, then Ken Severn.
Bobby Siegmiller, 10245 North Downing Drive. I apologize, I lost my voice. I was going to open with a song, but we're going to have to forego that because my voice is gone. So I'm going to try to talk loud here. First of all, been a lot of confusion whether this is going to be an assisted living facility, skilled nursing, post-acute care. You know, there's a lot of rumors that were circulating, so I appreciate the developer for clarifying what the development is, especially the city council. I know it's a thankless job what you guys do, so thank you for the hours you've invested into this. I'm actually pro-development. I love development. The proposed development is extremely nice. I like it. They've taken a lot of account into the type of structure. So I actually do like the development, just not at that location. That's one of the biggest challenges that I have with this proposal. And at our other meeting, at our meeting the other night, identified the role of city government is really to protect the taxpayer. And I don't feel this development in its current form really does that, to protect the taxpayer. A lot of the items that I have that I wanted to bring up in my 3 minutes have been discussed. So I'm going to very quickly go through the notes that I've taken. Parking, understand that 0.4 was proposed by Hill & Associates. The developers up that to 1.5. I still think this is inadequate. The notion that one car and disposable income, those two things don't really sync. If you look at Pleasant Grove, they have several districts down there. One is the mixed-use zone, the downtown district. They have a two-car per unit ordinance there, and that's the commercial and mixed use. The other area is the Grove district. They're about 2.5 there. So I think we're greatly deficient in parking, especially if you've got some of the kids, families coming to visit. The reality is 55, they say 45 is the new 55, so try to take a 45-year-old's car away from them. Good luck. You know, I just don't see that happening there. Feasibility study, there's been a lot of mixed information as we've discussed this with Planning Commission, City Council, information about traffic and economic impact, absorption. I still question. In Pleasant Grove, they have currently about 2,800 units. There's another 286-unit apartment complex going in. That's a lot. Vintaro has proposed in American Fork about another 1,300 units. So I'd be interested to review the feasibility study to see, number one, if we can attract that. Lawsuit is one of the items that I wrote down. Several developers have proposed larger structures and have been denied density and height variance. The zoning is SC1, office retail sub-district. It's the idea behind the design guidelines was that 50% residential, 50% commercial, not to exceed more than 50%. I think we've gone beyond that. Do I seriously have 6 seconds? Taxes, I think it's been identified by our own city. Residents consume about 129% of sales or of their property tax. Commercial is a lot better, and I know this is being couched as a commercial development. We're missing that key component, which is the sales tax component. So last thing I'll say, as far as the economics of this, and I appreciate the time. What's his name? He said I could have a minute of his. Is that okay?
Unfortunately, you can't give him time, so you're just going to have to wrap up.
Okay, last closing comment. I've read a lot of the blogs by the council members. identifying this area as kind of the wart nobody wants to develop there. It's basic economics. Purchase price, and I have nothing against the smarts and nothing against the developers because I like both. I'm pro-development. It is a function of price. When you lower the price, you get a different demographic in. Multifamily, apartment complex, really putting the density, high density in there is what makes this type of development pencil.
Thank you very much.
So anyway, I'm not done yet. No, I'm kidding. Thank you. Appreciate it. It's a beautiful development.
Just trying to be fair to everyone, Bobby. Ken Severn and then Steve Proppett.
Hello. My name is Ken Severn. I live at 4511 Landmark Circle. And I have a few concerns. I appreciate what the developers have done. I appreciate the time that you spend. And I appreciate the comments from my fellow citizens. Just a few things. I reference Midtown Village. They've had lawsuits. They've had bank write-offs. That has not been successful. This isn't Midtown Village, but that's a concern. I'm concerned about the term federal guidelines. If I remember, the term guidelines was used in the movie Ghostbusters, and sometimes guidelines and laws, well, they're different. So I would want that clarified. Studies. We've had studies in the past, and studies are kind of like a paper where you're trying to promote your you know, what you want, and you usually do the research that supports what you have. So I would encourage you to consider that as with relation to studies and the fact that we've been burned by studies before. Lastly, there's also Walmart Commercial. If I understand, one of Walmart's strategies is to buy land and then lease it. They put their building on it, and that brings other commercial development. When there's a Walmart there, there are people there, and that drives a lot of the commercial action. I don't think that Hart's or McDonald's has been hurting. I don't know their financials, but as I drive by, they seem to be pretty busy on a regular basis and at a variety of hours. And lastly, I've never waited for traffic generated by that field. And I rode my bike just kind of coincidentally through, right on 4800 West at the beginning of school this week. I will never do that again. That was dangerous. So I just encourage you to consider that in those times and those peak hours with regard to traffic. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Steve Proppett and then Mike McGee.
All right. I'm Steve Proppett. I live at 9913 North 4680 West. I too thoroughly enjoy the lifestyle that Cedar Hills affords me. Just came off a run, that's why I'm kind of smelly right now. We got these beautiful trails. I appreciate you incorporating the trail into your plan. It makes it more palatable for me. I like the field behind my house. I like the deer in there, but I realize that property is owned commercial and not garden. And so I understand we'll have to concede a little bit. Hopefully not too much, but we'll concede a little bit. So I really appreciate Blue Line working with the residents over the last, I don't know how many months. I know it's been quite a few. Working with people like myself and other neighbors to come up with a more acceptable plan. Then going from the five stories to the three and four stories, they've displayed great teamwork and class with the Planning Commission, the City Council, and the citizens. And I greatly appreciate that. I really do. I look forward to working with them more to ensure that phases three and four are mutually beneficial, because those are the ones I'm more concerned with personally, but I also am concerned with this one. I love the jogging path idea, like I said. I like the concept of having more grandmas and grandpas around. It's the ideal demographic to boost the revenue at the golf course. My mom and dad were here in town last week from St. George. I told them about these plans, and my mom said she'd like to move here when they get back from their mission in a few years. So, and I imagine that's the case for many others. If people move back home with you, well, it's your fault for letting them move back home with you. My mom downsized, so I couldn't move back in. to me, this seems like a win that has taken a lot of work and will take some more hard work for the rest of the development of the commercial zone. So if we do choose to go forward with this, and Blue Line is allowed to do this, then I hope we have that same cooperation and work for the remainder of the development. And as a side note, I don't mind paying the property taxes instead of just, I don't want to bring in businesses to generate revenue if we're bringing in just, I don't want a Home Depot behind my house. I don't want a movie theater behind my house for that matter either. So I like the thought that they've come and make this more community and bring in the trendy type of stores. Like he said at the last meeting, I don't think you said it in this meeting, but you talked about that last meeting. So anyway, that's what I have to say. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Mike McGee and then Mike Stye.
Okay, I have a list of points I'd just like to read off. I'm going to try and be as expeditious as possible. Please indulge me. I'll try to fit it within the time constraint. I would like to see a feasibility study on what the strain would be on the 55 plus for the first responders, because I find it hard to believe that the statistics that were quoted earlier would be accurate. Secondly, while I was mayor, as you know, once upon a time, we had great pressure being put on us to upgrade or upsize the main sewer line going down 4800 West. A, I'd like to know if that was ever done. And B, I can assure you that pressure will be put on you even to a greater extent if it never has, if this goes in. tax revenue per acre was stated that it would be three times what is currently, but the tax liability would also be three times as much. As you know, property tax consumption by commercial properties is around 80% to 90%, while property tax consumption by residential properties is around 129%. Those were the numbers when I was mayor. I'm sure they haven't changed appreciably now. So that would be a 29% per unit net loss to the city, so I'm not buying that $80,000 net gain to the city figure. Water rights, that I hear the water rights would come in with this, but keep in mind, water rights are not the same thing as water availability. So you need to keep that in mind as you make those deliberations. Does this meet the green space requirements? Does it meet the height restrictions? It absolutely doesn't meet our height restrictions. It's nearly twice the height restrictions in the guidelines. So I think that's significant. The library concept I thought was a little bit laughable. I was mayor for 6 years. I was the chairman of the Utah County Council of Governments for a year. And we discussed library constantly during those 6 years. And the consensus was that a library of any size in a small city of Cedar Hills is not viable. So that's not anything that would even be worth consideration. The interesting thing that I also thought was, if you have this many people come into this large of a development, it's nearly the size of either one or two wards, speaking from an LDS perspective, which means you would probably have to come in with another building. The only logical thing would be for the church to come in and put pressure on you to sell more of the commercial space for a church building, which would further dilute the commercial space. So that would be a concern of mine. Let's see. I'm trying hard here. I think the people that would be drawn to this would be most likely from this north end of the county. What does that say?
Time's up.
Time's up? Really, I have some significant points here. Do you not want to hear them?
Everyone's limited to three.
When minutes. I was mayor, we gave people that had good points extra time.
I appreciate that.
I need just a less than 1 minute.
Okay, I understand. No one can give you time, but in light of where we are tonight, I'll give you 30 seconds. Okay, make it quick, please.
The Walmart traffic typically draws other big box stores, so that's a likely thing that we could see. Empty buildings deteriorate rapidly. I don't trust banks like anybody else here trusts banks, and let me tell you, I inspect bank-owned properties all the time, and they are dilapidated.
I don't trust the management companies to do a good job. I inspect management-owned, company-operated properties, and they are dilapidated. So I don't buy either one of those as well. Mass transit here is not the same as it is in Sandy, and I would like to see a feasibility study supporting any of the claims that were made here tonight. What about the parking as it pertains to the family reunions? I thought that was completely contradictory, to have one parking unit per space per unit, but then say that you're encouraging family reunions there. Where are they going to park if they have a family reunion? So please consider these points. The magnitude of the building, I think, far exceeds what's appropriate for Cedar Hills.
Thank you so much. Michael Stye, and finally Jason Randall.
Well, I tried to give my time away twice, so that means the mayor must really want to hear what I have to say.
I do want to hear what you have to say.
No, I think it's pretty clear. Last time I was here at the city council meeting, I think my position is well known. I don't think I can add anything to what's been said already, because I do think they're valid points. But one thing I do want to say is I appreciate the time that the developer has created this nice presentation. They've had months to do it. And we're just coming in as citizens to counteract why we think it's not a good idea. And one thing I wanted to say is, at a town hall meeting that we had recently, it was established that the building was going to be 70 feet high at the highest point. Way too high, way too big, especially when you consider that lot in the Walmart is the gateway into Cedar Hills. I mean, you turn left, and this is where you go into Cedar Hills. To have a monstrosity building, high density, that big, and a Walmart on the other side, I moved from Tooele to Cedar Hills to get away from that kind of development. And I don't want to see Cedar Hills go that way. And a Walmart and a high density apartment building is not a good mix. I'm with everyone else who doesn't trust the banks, because if these kind gentlemen, hopefully not, get hit by a bus or something, the bank will do what's in the bank's best interest. And to say they won't revert it back to open applications for anybody to rent there, to say that's not going to happen is an untruth, in my opinion. And we shouldn't count on that happening, because it won't. Banks are in it to make money, and they'll do what they have to do it. And the last thing, with all the feasibility studies, I do think that's important that we do that. I'd like to see, you know, a two-story building with 150 units at the most, along with everyone else here, because I think a consensus would be that everyone here is against the size of that building. It's just too big, too high, and it doesn't fit in with the city. And, you know, I have a little boy that's going to be going to Cedar Ridge Elementary right there, and I have to think about that extra traffic coming up and down there. People already speed on that road, and there's a speed bump there already. That extra traffic with the high school there, I just see many more accidents that are happening there already with 600 extra cars. And believe me, I'm 10 years away from 55 plus, and I'd like to think that I would have a car even at 55, 65, or 75. My mom's 85, and she still drives. And to say that, you know, they're going to be walking across the street to Walmart to do all their shopping, you know, and they're not going to have the cars, I mean, that's not true. People are working until their late 70s. And so, you know, to paint a picture that, you know, this is just kind of, you know, a community that's not going to travel much, they don't have cars, is another untruth, in my opinion. So I think, you know, if you guys keep that in mind, and, you know, vote against this project, I would encourage. Thanks.
Thank you. Jason Randall.
My name is Jason Randall. I live at 4504 West, 9900 North in Cedar Hills. My wife and I have lived here a while. We absolutely love it. One thing with the traffic, I know that the gentlemen are concerned about getting hit by a bus, but if they do get hit by a bus, it will not be a UTA bus. UTA has already said they're not going to come back to Cedar Hills. Once they put the Front Runner station in American Fork, the pressure is on them to make that successful. We had two very successful bus routes that went from Cedar Hills to Salt Lake that were literally packed every day. UTA will not bring those routes back, because they have to make Front Runner successful. So to depend on UTA to do public transport for the senior citizens there is not going to happen. They've already said it's not going to work. We keep calling this a commercial property, which is interesting. It is high density residential. That's what it is. It's not commercial. We're talking about bringing 600 people in. I'm a law enforcement officer employed by an agency in Utah County. I would love to find where you're getting your numbers about a low impact on municipal services. I've responded to every type of call in every city in this county. I guarantee you, if we bring 600 people in this home, in this area, it doesn't matter if they're 55 plus or 25 plus, your calls for service are going to skyrocket and go through the roof. That is reality. You may have just been looking at the medical side. As a law enforcement officer, I guarantee you that the price that is going to have to be paid to bring more officers in to deal with that area is going to raise exponentially. That's the fact of the matter. It's going to happen. Okay, I'd love to know where you're getting your numbers, because I've responded to all of them. The last thing I want to say, and then I know everybody's kind of talked a long time, is there's a lot of people here tonight. A lot of times when you get a topic like this, a button topic, you get the loud minority that comes out. And people think, oh, that's just the loud minority having their saying. That's the popular thing, and push them aside. Council members, mayor, this is not the loud minority. This is the silent majority that have kind of risen up at this point. This is a very, very important topic to us. This is high density residential in a building that is literally going to dwarf any other building in all of Cedar Hills. This is what Cedar Hills is going to be known for. Not the residential community we have, not the neighborhood that we have, not the friendly atmosphere we have. We're going to have this monolith of a building that is going to dominate everything else that's here. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so I don't know how you feel about this, but I think evenings like this are helpful. I think that when you have full-throated and passionate discussions about an issue, that can only be a good thing for the council. So I appreciate what everyone has said for the project, against the project. I think it's really helpful. Now, before I turn the time over to the council, I'll give my thoughts. And full disclosure, my house backs up to the lot where they want to develop. So this has interested me for a while. So there's a lot of things I like about it. And so architecturally, I think it's a beautiful building. I like a lot of the amenities. And Doug and Corey have been a pleasure to deal with up to this point. Smarts have too. And so there's a lot of that I like about it. And for anyone that's been to the council meetings, you know that I've had one concern all along, and it still is my concern. And so I've been concerned that at 300 units, if it doesn't get leased out, then it doesn't allow them to finish the retail part, which is what I'm really interested in. And so I've said for a long time since I was a council member and since I've been mayor that the commercial district is really important to me. I think it's vital to our city going forward. And so financially, we're doing just fine as a city. But the next step of a city, once you develop residentially, is to develop commercially. And so that's important to me. And I think we have one shot to do that right, and only one shot. So having said that, if they weren't able to lease out the number of units and complete the residential, which I want to have, that's my concern. So time is yours, council. Discuss, debate, ask all the questions you want. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
That's okay?
You bet.
First off, I want to thank everybody for participating tonight. I think it's been an eye-opening experience for me to see this many people. I've lived here 14 years. I've never been to a city council meeting. Well, take that back. There are a few others who are close to this. But on this side of it, it's interesting. So thank you for your comments. I've taken good notes. And I just want to, in full disclosure as well here, I have been working as a member of the Planning Commission on this project for, we're pushing like 10 months, aren't we, Doug, Corey? So, as a member of the Planning Commission, I've seen this project come a long ways. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for the developers, for the smart family that own this property. I think I want to make sure that's perfectly clear with everybody. I hear oftentimes people say this is the city's property. This is privately owned property by a family that has participated in the development of Cedar Hills for many years. They deserve a tremendous amount of respect from us as residents. So having said that, as a member of the council now, I also need to respect the wishes of the people that have expressed their opinions. It was obviously predominantly against tonight for what I'm hearing. In full disclosure, I've been a proponent of this project from the beginning because I know I am a developer and a general contractor, and I understand the economics of development. Residential property is great, which is what I primarily participate in, but I have done a lot of small commercial as well over the years and planned large master plan communities. The commercial element is a very important part of this. And I've had lots of concerns about this property. It's not the most desirable commercial property or portion of the commercial property within the city. And so having said that, I have looked at the plans and thought that what we need is more density to attract commercial. And that's just a matter of fact. We do need more density to attract commercial. We're not on a highway. We're not Thanksgiving Point. We're not the Meadows. And we don't want to be them. I don't. I love where I live. But we do need people. I'd like to see some of the things that most of you probably. I'd love to see some great restaurants. I'd love to see some boutique shopping. I think we'll continue to attract that with a project like this. Maybe it's too big. Maybe it's too tall. Those are things I think we could probably work out down the line. But I wanted to point out a couple things. There's been a lot of misinformation that's been disseminated out there. One of the things that has not been mentioned, and I've asked our staff, who has been tremendous in this process, by the way, you should all be very proud of the city employees that we have. I mean, coming on this side of it in the three months I've been here, I'm impressed. We need to thank our city manager and his staff. Having said that, this is not all about financial situations, but there are some things that come into play here. I mean, there are fees that the developer will pay. I mean, roughly calculated, I think there's over $3 million of a development impact fees that will be paid by the developer before he pulls his permit. Like I said, it's not all about money, but that's park fees, that's sewer water fees, that's things that can help our city. And like the mayor said, we are not in a financial problem in our city. We manage our budget, we balance our budget, and we've worked through a lot of problems in the past. But having said that, I will welcome, I appreciate the comments. I'll take them into consideration. I'm in favor of tabling this proposal for now and letting developers come back with what they've heard tonight. And there is one of the last comments, by the way. There was a comment. You are a vocal majority, maybe minority, I don't know. But I've also received a lot of comments in my Facebook, welcome to friend me, whatever, on the blog, comments around my neighborhood. Senior citizens are a tremendous asset. The Bridgestone people is my neighborhood. I love them. If my mother was alive, she passed away a couple years ago. We moved her here about 6 years ago from Virginia. If this facility had been here, she would have been in there. She has zero cars. She wasn't driving. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that that can be hashed about. I would just like to say that I'd like to see it reconsidered and taken the comments and let the developers continue. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go next.
Okay.
As a council member, I view myself as a representative of the residents of Cedar Hills. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in the residents' opinions. And I feel that with the anytime an issue gets this much attention, that we really do need to listen to the residents. I'm impressed that they have even driven down to the community in Sandy and looked at that building and looked into this issue. I know that there's feasibility studies that can be done, and sometimes they are proven wrong, but I believe the majority of the residents are not wrong very often, and if they are, then they will get what they want anyway, and that's what the council members, I believe, need to represent, is what the will of the people that they are serving. And so early on in this development, a lot of the feedback I was getting was negative, and that kind of shaped a lot of my opinion. And so I think that that's something that we have to take into consideration as a council, is the majority of the comments that I've gotten through emails. I've gotten a lot of emails over the last 3 weeks, months, have been concerns about the height, the density, the traffic, you know, all these different things. And feasibility studies can be done. I don't know for sure if it's the city that paid for them or the developers that paid for them, but I tend to trust the gut feel of a majority of the residents over a feasibility study, and so I've been against it to this point. There'd have to be major changes made to it, reducing the size, the levels, there'd have to be a lot of major changes before I could support it. But
okay.
Do you want me to go next?
Go ahead.
I would echo most of what's been said at this table tonight. I think that blue line has been great to work with. And as Mike mentioned, this has been in a process that's been going on for almost 10 months now. And I also appreciate our planning commission. They spent a considerable amount of time and effort going through all of the plans, and making some recommendations, listening to residents and giving that feedback, as has blue line. And so I appreciate the process. And I think that's process works, and that's what helps us eventually get something that is what the community wants. Like Gary said, I think that the facility is a beautiful facility, and I like the thought of this better than a strip mall or some additional office space, especially when the office space that we currently have has a difficult time staying leased out. But that being said, I do recognize as well that at this table I sit as a representative of the residents of Cedar Hills. And while I have had a few people who have reached out expressing a desire for this commercial development to be finished and acknowledgement and praise for this particular building, most of what I have heard overwhelmingly has been that they have felt that this building does not fit the look and feel of the community. Again, mainly on the height of the building as well as the number of units. And so I'm hopeful that with all of the discussion that's happened in Planning Commission and tonight, that Blue Line will remain interested and would be willing to come back to the city with a proposal that takes into account the overwhelming desire of our residents to have a two-story, 100-unit facility. I love the master planning vision that Blue Line has. I love the fact that they're willing to master plan the whole thing and not just take a chunk and somebody else takes a chunk and then who knows what we end up with. But I do, again, recognize my role as a representative. And so with that being said, feel that unless some significant changes are made, I couldn't see this moving forward at this point.
Mr. Cipolla.
So I want to first of all thank all the residents who've come out tonight. One of the things I really believe in and have pushed for our city for a number of years is citizen engagement. I think you guys mostly know that our city council meetings are generally empty unless there's a big issue like this. I think your voice is really important. It's critical for us on the council to hear from you when we have issues of this magnitude before us. I challenged a number of people to come to the meeting tonight and let their voices be heard, or to write letters to us if they couldn't be here. And I'm really pleased with the response that we've gotten. I counted 17 people who spoke tonight. I counted 24 emails or texts that I received. And I haven't counted the Facebook comments because there's been a lot of them. So I really do appreciate the feedback you've given us and that you've stepped up to the table and participated. I think everybody sees that most of the comments tonight were on the negative side in the sense of not supporting this development. That's not a surprise to me. I've been talking to residents since before the election, so dating back to June, July, August timeframe. Every time I explain this development to residents, I heard a lot of concerns, and we've tried to relay those concerns to Doug and to Corey, and thankfully they've been receptive. If I was ever going to approve a building like this, I'd want you guys building it. It's a gorgeous building. I like the style of it. In a community where they were accepting of higher density residential development, if I were on that council, I'd love to have you guys come before us. But I keep coming back to our design guidelines and our city code. In my researching of the issue and in my studying the issue, I've really looked at the commercial zone and what it's intended to be for our city. When we laid out the commercial zoning and when we established our guidelines, a set of public hearings was held back in the year 2000, so quite some time ago. There's a list of those meetings that were held in the commercial guidelines, and extensive public feedback was received to shape these guidelines, and then again in 2004 when they revised, more public input was received. So in my mind, these guidelines are extremely important for our city. They represent us coming together as a community and saying, here's what our vision is, this is what we want this commercial zone to be, this is how we see it going forward. And I just want to read some of those guidelines because it helps explain how it shapes my feelings as well as the feelings of the residents that I've talked to. In our city code, so this is code that we are bound by, it says that it is the specific intent that architectural design and character of operation shall, to the maximum extent possible, be compatible with that of the surrounding residential environment, and review, approval, and attachment of conditions upon development within the zone will be predicated upon accomplishment of this objective. So what that's telling me is that being compatible with the nearby residences is really important. I've had feedback from a few, not a large, but a few number of residents who say, oh, those people who live near the commercial zone, they knew it was zoned commercial when they moved there, and they should expect that they have to put up with this kind of a large-scale development there. And I think that's misguided. I think that our community has said that special consideration should be given to the residents that live near there, and that any development has to fit with the existing low-density residential uses that are nearby. In addition, in our guidelines, these guidelines are not binding on the council, but they do shape the decisions that both the Planning Commission and the council should make. The guidelines say that design and planning of an operation within the commercial district shall be primarily for the benefit of the residents of Cedar Hills. And so what you're hearing today from residents saying, I just don't see the benefit to me, that's really paramount in our considerations as to what should be done there. It said considerations shall include density, diversity, and design. So the density, the impact on our city, is a primary concern that we have to take into account. It says land development should be sensitive to adjacent single-family housing. It says in this particular sub-district of the commercial zone, lower density may be due to size, scale, and height of the structure due to a less intense use. It allows for an allowance for higher building heights with setback, but the term used is may. It's a guideline. It's not a requirement that we have to approve it if the additional setback is arranged for. And then finally, with respect to this particular parcel, part of the parcel is in what we call our neighborhood retail sub-district, the part that is toward the west side, towards 4800 West. And there's specific wording there that says, commercial uses that are not focused on generating on-site sales should be encouraged to utilize properties that do not front 4800 West or Cedar Hills Drive in the mixed-use office retail area. So specifically saying that next to Cedar Hills Drive should not be an area for residential development, that because that is a primary road, it should be for commercial development, just as much as 4800 West. So that's some of the guidelines and the city code that is shaping my thoughts, along with your input. I think residents are really appropriately unhappy with the size of the building, and that includes not just the height, but the footprint, the sheer scale of the building, the density, so the total number of residents that would be there, and the fact that our zoning never explicitly allows for high-density residential use. If we had intended a zone to be built that way, we would have zoned this area as high-density residential, like Pleasant Grove does with their areas of their city that are meant for apartment complexes. So those are some of the reasons why I'm just not in favor of a development of this nature there. I'm not sure I would even approve a two-story building that was primarily residential. I really would like to see a mix of residential and commercial in that area.
Mr. Augustus, do you want to say anything?
Absolutely.
Okay. Time is yours.
So I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. I've been on the council a little, just over 2 years now. And prior to that, I actually served as president for the HOA in the Cedars West for 2 years, and I was also a board member for another year. During that time, I got to attend a lot of council meetings, and it's not very often that an issue like this hits our city. And it's good to see residents come out and voice their concerns. I've gone through, I don't know how many emails over the last couple of days, and a lot of them with people that are sitting here tonight. I've received some emails that are personal and hateful. I've been attacked personally for supporting this building and being a proponent of it from the very beginning. I've had people that say they like it, great, move on, and everything in between. And part of my job sitting on this side of the table is to have a thick skin and take a lot of those comments. And so I do that willingly. I'm the one that signed up for it. If anybody wants to come trade me at any point, you're more than welcome. Just kidding. But what I've found out over the last couple of years as I've served our HOA and also the city is that a lot of times when people are happy with the status quo, they don't care to get involved because it doesn't affect them directly. It doesn't affect them personally. It doesn't affect their property rights. It doesn't really affect how they live their day-to-day life. And so a lot of times it really takes a big issue like this, and it's a little sad that it takes an issue like this to really get people involved, because honestly, it would make our jobs a lot easier if we had this many people coming out to every issue and giving us their feedback and giving us their intake, because we would be able to get a better litmus test of the residents to know what they want. And a lot of times that's not the case. So thank you for you guys to coming out tonight, because as you can see, with 10,000 residents, we have a lot of people that are happy with the status quo, and they're sitting home watching TV or doing whatever they need to do tonight. Like Councilmember Geddes said, I'm also a contractor and a developer, primarily in residential. I've done a couple of small commercial projects, but nothing major. For me, I really look forward to the long-term prospects and what this will bring. With the city, we've had some very good discussions with some larger brokers and larger developers that are the ones that really go out and shop around commercial property and try to get businesses interested in open commercial property. And a lot of the feedback we've got from them, they don't like our property. They don't think it's viable. They don't think it'll work for a commercial district, that it's not visible enough, that we don't have the traffic counts, and the reasons go on and on. And so for somebody that's professional, that they do this every day, they risk millions and millions of dollars to come back to us and say, you know what, your commercial property really is not going to work for what you guys want it to, also pulls some weight with me. Pulls a little bit of extra weight with me too, just because we have to make sure that we're finding the balance between what will work for our city, what works for the residents, what will work for our commercial district, and will provide the things that our residents need for the next 5, 10, 20, even 30 years or longer. And so we have a really difficult job sitting on this side of the table, because at the same time we want to make sure that our residents are happy, that we're providing for their needs, their services, and their desires, and we're also trying to balance, well, what does that do for our city in the long term, because a lot of this will impact council members way after we're here. It's going to impact residents after we're here. So a simple decision by us now will have a pretty big, lasting, long-term effect. And so that's something I think all of the council members take very seriously. And that's why we've spent so much time and we've gone out and tried to get as much feedback as we can, is because we do care about this project. And a lot of people say, oh, I don't know how I could ever vote for you or how you could ever represent us as a city. But they're looking at one very small issue and not how everything is going as a whole. And so I would just make sure that as you go forward, no matter what happens with this project, realize that just because we may have a disagreement on one issue, it doesn't mean that you're wrong, that I'm wrong, that we're at odds with each other, or that we shouldn't be friends. I mean, yes, we may have a differing opinion on one thing, but we have to look at our community as a whole. And we have a lot of residents that we're trying to make happy. There's a lot of moving pieces in this, and we're never going to find the absolute right 100% perfect development that's 100% what everybody wants in the city. It will never happen. And so we have to be really careful that we're trying to make sure that we're pleasing the majority of our residents and doing what's right. And so I guess I would just say thank you for coming and voicing your opinion.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is a review action item, Council. So I'll entertain a motion.
Yes, I'd actually like to make a motion if I could. I would motion that we actually table this item for tonight and that we push it to a forward meeting and allow Blue Line and the developers to kind of let this information sink in, see if they would like to make any further changes to it and come back to us and contact the mayor and city manager at a further date and schedule this for another meeting.
I've got a motion. Is there a second?
I second that.
Motion that's been seconded. Let's have a vote starting from my
discussion. Just a real quick question. Yeah, discussion. I think I was under the impression Blue Line, that's what you were looking for as well. You wanted the item to be tabled to take into this feedback?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just so the council is clear, we're voting on a motion to table it. If you were wanting to vote another way, then you have to vote that way now. So starting with Mr. Zappala, yay or nay?
Yay.
Mr. Geddes?
Yay.
Mrs. Reese?
Yay.
Mr. Augustus?
Yay.
Mr. Crawley?
Yay.
Okay. Motion passes, meaning that it is tabled, which gives Blue Line an opportunity to go back and rethink what they're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're welcome to stay. We've got lots of other things to discuss, but I know that was probably why you were here. So we're going to continue on.
Can we take a quick break?
I really respect you a lot.
We're going to take a five-minute break. Mr. Zappala?
Dollar for dollar. It was 48 in the end.
Hey, David, how did people get the certificates? I didn't get one.
It should have been your bill.
I didn't get one.
Anybody who gets electronic billing does not get a discount.
I talked to them about that. And they said that there's a small benefit listed on that page. They're going to mail out individually these bills. So we got to follow up and see that those that don't get bills.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't get one.
So they,
not that I need it.
Do you want 18 rounds?
I'm just saying there's some people in the city who don't get a bill. So.
This kid.
Okay.
That was awesome. You took it. That was awesome.
Let's go. Okay, we are on item number 9, which is a review action item on awarding the bid for the 2013-2014 roadway repair subgrade asphalt. Who is presenting?
Jeff.
Jeff, time is yours.
Mm-hmm. I tabled it.
Thank you, mayors. Council, staff has identified a number of streets within the city that is in need of maintenance and repair, and we've identified this as our 2014 spring street improvement project. The memo is listing the areas that include larger portions of that project. There are also a few very small areas that need patching. We put this to public bid. We received 8 bids. Those are listed. They varied from $193,900 on the low end to $235,658 on the high end. We had one bid. You'll notice Eccles Paving was $188,273. This bid did not include the micro-surfacing that we'd requested. Adjusting that for the low bid for the micro-surfacing, they didn't fall into the low end of the overall bids. Therefore, it's staff's recommendation that you would approve the low bid of Staker Parson Company of $193,900.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What companies have we used in the past?
We've used a few of them, Staker, Geneva Rock, Eccles.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And have you been happy with Staker before?
Yes. Yes, they've treated us well.
Jeff, let me ask one quick question. Mm-hmm. I noticed Sugar Loaf is on that road, on that bid. I own a house on Sugar Loaf. I think people know that. To just resurface it, there's a lot going on with that road. Is there? Yes. Are you going to repair a curb and gutter before that, or are we just going to kind of cap over
curb
it?
Curb and gutter should be repaired regardless.
Different is it project. In those bids, or is that separate?
No, it's a separate project, but it would involve removal of asphalt and relaying of asphalt on that street.
So what's going to happen? I mean, if you do Sugarloaf, it seems to me like if you don't fix the concrete first, and then get the asphalt right up tight to the edges.
That's
you're kind of wasting money.
Yes.
We're wasting money.
We'd need to do a number of repairs on the curb gutter to get proper drainage, and then it would involve...
Could that be done in-house? Do we do that, or would we just have to bid that?
No, we'd contract that. We usually bid that out annually. We take bids for concrete work, and we... then use them throughout the year. So that's part of our stormwater maintenance repairs. And then there will also be some minor sidewalk repair. Same.
Okay.
So just to clarify that, does that mean you're planning on doing that before that particular road is done, or are we going to just go ahead and do the road anyway?
No, the concrete work would be completed prior to the asphalt.
Okay, great.
Any others?
Any other comments, questions?
I just have a quick comment, and that is that I, in my CFO work and with Burningham Enterprises, then we do a lot of work with two of these entities, so I will abstain from the vote because I don't feel like I am I feel like it's a conflict of interest for me to vote for this. So, but I will say of the two top ones, I know that they are very reputable, good companies, so I'd be comfortable with those. For sure. So
you're just abstaining. I'm abstaining. You're not taking a position for or against. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's all right. Thank you.
And just so I'm clear, and maybe this helps Rob with your vote, by law, we have to go with the lowest bidder.
That's my understanding, unless there's extenuating circumstances in which there's a specialty that comes into the trade.
Okay. Can I clarify that? So let's imagine we had a low bid from a company that you had worked with in the past that did bad work. Would we be able to not take their bid?
Yes. We could.
That would be the extenuating circumstance.
Right. That's what I wanted to clarify.
I think the law says the lowest responsible bidder.
Lowest qualified bidder. Effect. Isn't it? Qualified bidder.
It's the qualified.
And if you can disqualify them for poor work in the past,
that's a
disqualification.
We generally do get the qualifications, and the background comes in with the bids that we receive. They send in, you know, evidence that they are capable of doing the work.
Okay.
So
any more
questions? Yeah, I actually just wanted to say thanks to Jeff. I'm actually the one that tabled this from the last meeting. And the reason that I did that is I just wanted to make sure that it was on the agenda so that residents had a little bit longer chance to see it, just so that they were aware of what was going on. And I knew this meeting was coming up with the public hearing. So I just thought where we're awarding a contract of this size with this dollar amount attached to it, that it would be good just to have that extra little bit of time. So thank you for humoring us and letting us push it forward.
That's fine.
Okay. So I would make a motion for this.
Please, go ahead.
I will motion to approve the 2013-2014 roadway repair, subgrade asphalt, removal, replace, and microservice project, and award the project to Staker Parson Companies in the amount of approximately $193,900 with the qualification that the sidewalk and curb and gutter is done prior to this roadway repair.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion has been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Abstain.
Abstain. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Gustas.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Next item is the Mr. Mogg, you're staying up there for the Mesquite Park restroom. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you.
Can I ask a quick question about the road first?
Yes.
With that being said, how are residents notified that road work will be done?
We'll usually post that on the website. We send out notices, and then the contractor is responsible to do notices immediately prior to the work being completed, so they know when to get vehicles off of the road and when they'll be blocked from their driveways.
Do they do that via flyers?
They do door to door.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, time's yours, Jeff.
All right, the next item then is the Mesquite Park restroom and storage building, which we've been requested to install. This has been a long process trying to find the contractors, but we did arrive with seven bids, and these varied from $66,860 for a low bid to a high bid of $128,205. This recommendation from staff is that we accept the low bid from England Construction of $66,860.
I don't remember, unless I can look it up, unless somebody else has it, but does anybody remember what we had budgeted for Mesquite bathroom in 2014?
It was approximately
$77,000.
Yeah. And we've spent about $6,700 to get the improvements from the street into the park.
Okay.
We had originally hoped to get a grant for part of it, and that fell through at one point.
We did.
We actually did get some grant money from the county, so we'll be using that grant money from the county for two fiscal years that will be added to, and that's how we got to the $77,000.
So yes. So we won't be going over what we had anticipated budget-wise.
Correct. No. It's within
like
the budget.
Under it.
Actually, with the money we have, only one bidder meets our budget, and that's England. Okay. With the monies we have remaining. So England does meet, at their price of $66,860, does meet our budget.
And these were all comparable bids. They're bidding on the same project, same finish, same quality. They're all same exactly the same, right?
Yes, you wouldn't know it to look at the bids, but
there's a big variance between low and high. Yeah,
yeah. The difference between the low and the high is astounding. Yeah, I mean, I would expect a 20, 25, 30% difference on a project, but more than double the project is surprising.
It is.
Okay.
And do we have experience with this particular company, England Construction?
We do not. This will be a new experience.
Have we had any favorable recommendations from anybody else who's used them? Or?
Yes, I've got some good feedback from them. They're not far off of the second bidder, Webb Brothers, who did our basement here in our addition, and they was very good to work with and did the job as per request.
Okay, so do you need any additional information on the bidder? Are you comfortable in making the recommendation?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Any further questions? Not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the low bid received for the Mesquite Park restroom project and award the project to England Construction in the amount of approximately $66,860.
Okay. I'll second.
I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote, starting from my right. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Gustas.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much.
That's it.
That is it, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take a motion to adjourn. Oh, no, I'm
no,
sorry.
It's not.
There is
a discussion item
on SR 146. Now, I really had hoped that some residents were going to be here to listen to this. And so if someone wants to table it and to our next meeting and then make a motion to adjourn, I'm fine with that.
I will motion to move item number 12, the discussion of the jurisdictional transfer of SR 146, to our next meeting with the recommendation that it comes early on the agenda as far as number of items.
I agree with that. Okay.
Second.
Motion's been seconded.
Can I also suggest that we get staff to provide us, if it's not already in our packet, provide us with their discussion items and their recommendations, and then we can get feedback from residents.
Yeah, through, and so on SR 146, I know we're going to have lots of discussions, and we need to have lots of discussions. I'm hoping that we'll have residents here to listen to that discussion, and that's why I'm fine postponing this. So, okay, it's been postponed to our next meeting. I think we had a motion that's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Motion's been, is it someone seconding it?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you.